Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
Tim Anderson, he leads off this inning. He's hit in the hip. He flipped the bat on that home run. And Keller starts him off, hitting him in the hip.
I really don't have a problem with them plunking him. That is the price you pay for flipping the bat. What I don't understand is why he was thrown out of the game.
Let's get to this whole idea of the bat flip. I am not a big bat flip guy. I don't like when athletes necessarily bring attention to themselves. But I also understand that this is part of the way the game has changed and continues to change. Tim Anderson wasn't showing up an opponent as much as he was trying to get his own team going, and he flipped it toward his own dugout.
Exactly.
Did you expect the White Sox to retaliate for the retaliation? Where does it end?
Ask Joey Bats where it ends. It doesn't seem to.
It doesn't seem to.
But I come away from that entire experience, and this is how archaic I guess I am. The Sox owe them one.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Your morning guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
We're delighted to welcome in Jed Hoyer, the Cubs executive vice president and general manager. Really enjoyed the series in Miami. More like that, please, right?
But that's how we played real clean baseball. All three of our starting pitchers threw well. In particular, you know, Quintana and Hamels the last two nights with seven innings and no walks. And the game looks really simple when starting pitchers go seven scoreless and don't walk anyone and the defense plays well. We all know that things can look almost formulaic when you get to that place where the starters look good. And we know it's not always going to be like that, but it's nice to see a really good turn through the rotation. And hopefully we can just keep on cranking out good starts.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of The Score. And David is taking a rare day off, and we are delighted to welcome in our colleague here at The Score, Danny Parkins, Mr. Afternoon Show.
Thanks for having me,
Mully. Good morning, Danny. Thank you for coming. Thanks for getting up. My God.
Oh, it only took three alarms.
Yeah, exactly.
Man. You know, it's dark outside at this hour of the day.
What's very odd is it's usually dark for the first hour and a half, maybe 2 hours of the program, somewhere in that range. And to watch the sun rise is a feeling of hope.
Sure.
I'll be honest with you.
I've always...
A new day dawning.
I've heard of these sunrises. I hear they're very beautiful. I've read about them in books.
I've always felt... Honest to God, that sunsets are better than sunrises, but that's just me. The sun sets, it's almost a dramatic event. The sun rising, it's just like it went from black to gray, and now it's light.
It's because when people, you know, say a sunrise is so beautiful, they're kind of almost just bragging, like, oh, they're up at that hour, and they're so high and mighty that they were able to see the sunrise.
Oh, I love to see the sunrise, yeah.
People say they've got to be productive, really. Oh, it's a sign of being a productive person that you wake up this early.
No, it's not. No. Yeah. I used to go to bed at this hour, and it was quite a dramatic, made-up word, both dramatic and drastic change of lifestyle to start awakening at this hour. And it's I do feel like I do get more done, but that's because I do less fun things, right?
Sure.
Like, I'm not really out that late. I never really can have a cocktail during the week, maybe on the weekend, and by Friday you don't really feel like Saturday might be the only day because Sunday you're getting geared up for the week.
Are you a nap guy?
Never have napped, ever.
Never.
At any point in my life. When I started covering the NBA 100 years ago, I was told, fly in early. You know you're going to get there on time and then take a nap. And I'm like, all right, yeah, great. So I would get up at the crack of dawn, take the first flight out, and then I would sit in a hotel room staring at a wall. And if I actually fell asleep, I was useless trying to cover the game because I'd be groggy the whole time.
Man.
So I don't nap. I never have. I just try to go to bed earlier and try to spend every second sleeping that I can.
Yeah, on my to-do list today, it's host this show and nap.
Yeah. So. Dustin, do you sleep standing up, right? Or you stand on your head or something?
That's the only way I don't fall asleep.
Okay. He actually stands up to watch games.
I stand up like during the Blackhawks runs when the Western Conference playoffs, they'd be playing L.A. or San Jose.
Sure.
I had to stand up. Yeah. And then I'd sit down in between the periods, set an alarm for 20 minutes on my phone. If I happened to doze off then, I'd wake up. And if I had slept through it a little bit, at least it was running on the DVR so I could roll back, push back the live. But I stand up watching games, yes.
I'm so envious of that, though. So you probably have no problem falling asleep on an airplane.
Oh, no. He could fall asleep anywhere.
Instantly. I was told that's a sign of low intelligence by a boss once.
Is that right?
Rich Bond, when I worked at 101 Sports. That's a sign of low intelligence.
Well, I must say, I have a very hard time sleeping on an airplane. When I was younger, I far too paranoid. I've got too much urban paranoia to fall asleep in public. And I know no one is going to root through my pants and steal my wallet or stab me on an airplane, but do I really know that? There were snakes on a plane in one particular movie. That happened.
Right. I also just, I want to be alert, you know, in case something goes down. I'm going to spring into action.
So like, if there's a crisis and you're going to be the guy to wrestle someone, I like it.
I'm 6 foot nothing, 160 pounds. I've never won a physical confrontation in my life. But in that instance, I believe I will become Jack Bauer.
The inner animal will come out of you.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It makes no sense.
Okay. All right. So there wasn't a ton of sports last night. The Cubs, obviously, with a day off after all that hard work down in Miami and come home to face the Diamondbacks this afternoon. The White Sox played in the afternoon yesterday, which was really a perfect time for a game. I really enjoyed watching that game until they got to the end of it. And then I found myself just – Dave Van Dyke used to say 100 years ago that he would keep a list of the games that kind of got away, the games you should have won that you didn't win. I'm putting that one on that list. I really thought they had won that game a couple times. And then – you know, Ryan Cordell comes up. We talked about that yesterday. God bless him. He hits a home run. Good. That's good. It's good to see that. They also brought up Carson Fulmer.
That was a problem. Not quite as good.
Bad. That wasn't as good.
Yeah. And
hard to come in relief and start hitting guys.
I get the same. It's not a good way to go about it. It's more efficient than walking a guy in four pitches.
Quicker.
You just hit him and you get it over with. But how much does it hurt if the wins and losses of this season don't really matter? Right?
Like, yeah.
You're right.
You're right.
That's a game you should have won. But I would think it would be fairly easy to move on from a tough loss like that and say, hey, Eloy hit an opposite field bomb. That's good.
That's a really good sign. That's a fun thing to look for. I don't know. Did he hit those guys because they were trying to bunt on him? I'll show them. What was the thinking there? Did the ball get away from him?
So it looked
like there was no control, but I love the idea. You're going to bunt? Well, eat this.
Before they bat flipped on him, he hit him.
I am not fielding anything. You get to first base.
It was a preemptive hitting of the batter.
Before they bat flipped.
I'm going to throw this bat at practice. You're going to hit it 400 feet. I'll just put you on first base.
And it was great to see Tim Anderson double down on the bat flip. Tim Anderson had another good game. He's hitting the ball. He's seeing the ball. And once he gets on the bases, he's a danger to everyone. But he didn't hesitate to say that he would love to do it again.
He doesn't strike me as someone who's going to back away or back down from any sort of criticism or scrutiny. And something tells me this will not be the last time Tim Anderson gets plunked intentionally.
Well, certainly there seems to be a major issue with Kansas City with that sort of thing. They seem to have some sort of their unwritten rule book is not really unwritten. It seems like it's cast in stone somehow.
Can you explain your guys over there in Kansas City? I blame you mostly for all of this.
You blame me mostly for a lot of things, I think. Or at least that's what I hear through the grapevine. Yeah, you know, Ned Yost is an old school hard ass. And after the game yesterday, he was asked, you know, you'd have any problem with what Keller did. He goes, what? Just a pitch got away from him, as far as I know. He's great at playing dumb. My guess is he falls asleep on airplanes. No problem.
Yeah, he's just playing.
Yeah, right. Just playing dumb. And but it was the height of hypocrisy because when they were good,
right,
Yordano Ventura was picking fights with everybody.
Sure.
They all had handshakes and dance moves on the base paths.
That whole bullpen was a kind of a gang of celebrants.
Yeah, all of them. And they didn't hit a ton of home runs, but when they did, they'd certainly bat flip and celebrate and curtain call and anything like that. So
they're a proud team, Danny. They're a proud organization, and you can't embarrass them. Give me a break.
Well, but hold on. Here's the flip side of it. I said this yesterday afternoon. Tell me if you guys agree as Sox fans. My guess is this year, at some point, someone will pimp a home run off of a White Sox pitcher.
Sure.
And flip a bat. But then a Sox pitcher
will plunk somebody.
Will then plunk someone, and they'll be on the other side of it.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I really believe this. I knew when he threw the bat, is watching the game, I was like, wow, oh boy, they're going to hit him for that. I knew that. He must have known it, right? You knew that was coming. It didn't surprise me that it happened. And I'm not saying he deserved it or anything like that, but it's never throw a ball at someone. That's an awful thing. He put it perfectly. He didn't injure him. He put it right on the buttocks where it belongs. And he did. I thought he did a good job of plunking him. I didn't get too riled up about it. I felt like cause and effect. That when he did that, he had to know that they were probably going to do something to retaliate.
I think that that's true because that's how it's always been in baseball. The question became, and I think is, should that be?
Shouldn't.
Right.
And it really should never happen. And you should be allowed to flip a bat. There's nothing wrong with that. The bat flip, I mean, if everyone was doing it and it got tiresome, but that Jose Bautista, that was one of the coolest moments in sports when he threw that bat away like he would never.
What was the moment? I agree with you.
Game-winning home run. Right. I get it. Yeah,
not to go up 2-0 on the Royals on a day game at 35th and Shields in front of 400 people.
But see, the
400 people.
Kevin was
there.
If it was a night game, it would have been different. Apparently, he had to specify that it was a day game.
I thought that Kevin might have caught the home run because I had seen him on social media show where he was sitting.
That would have been a story if he had caught
the Tim Anderson home run.
You called dibs on that section.
It was way behind me, though, because he really hit the crap.
Because he crushed it.
Yeah.
Bad flip worthiness. So now it's okay if it's a big home run. Yeah. It's not okay if it's not.
It's crazy.
It's entertainment.
It is entertainment.
And what I would think would be better for the game is if the next time he comes up and there's the rematch, if he strikes him out and then Keller trash talks Tim Anderson or gives a big fist pump or barks at him.
Right. That happens.
But that seems to be a more reasonable response than throwing a baseball at him 94 miles an hour. Because what if that gets away and instead of hitting him in the buttocks,
it hits
him in the head?
I got shot in the buttocks. I'm not promoting it. I'm just saying I wasn't surprised by it. I'm not calling for it. I don't like it. But you do get a sense that sort of thing starts, you know, baseball wars.
I'm not surprised by it at all. And I thought Connor made a great point yesterday. Both those guys are under 25. It's so ingrained in baseball.
Yes.
We can't even say this is old school, Justin Verlander, John Lester, red ass type or anything like that.
Right.
This is something that is ingrained in the sport. Keller felt like he owed it to his teammates.
You don't think it was ordered up?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a management problem. And I think the idea that, the one got away. I love when they lie about it in the postgame.
I do too.
Fantastic.
It's great.
I could hear that all day, and I don't know why. Really? You're going to stand there and say, I'll repeat it one more time. I love it. It's so much fun.
And Ned Yost in particular, given that he knows that his team has been on the other end of it so many times, it's particularly rich.
Dallas Keuchel is close to signing with either the Brewers or the Phillies. Both. Let me tell you something. Either one of those signings is bad for the Cubs. Is that fair enough to say? Dallas Keuchel joining either the Phillies or the Brewers, especially the Brewers, bad
especially
for the Cubs.
Especially the Brewers.
But the Phillies are pretty damn good, and you add him to that, and that could be another hurdle.
Obviously,
not a Clint hurdle, Dallas Keuchel.
Didn't love seeing that news. Let's just get the Cubs back to 500 before they worry too much about anyone else. I have no interest in seeing him sign with the Brewers.
The NBA playoffs, 38 points for KD in the Warriors' 132-105 victory over the Clippers. Order restored. They lead the series 2-1. The Spurs look like they're better than the Nuggets, and they won that game 118-108. They're up 2-1. 76ers, 31 points from Ben Simmons. Who knew he could do that? I thought the issue with Ben Simmons was that he couldn't do that, but he did score 31, and they did have a big win over the Nets, 131-115, for a 2-1 series lead. I look forward to the weekend because I can catch up on the NBA. A lot of the I tape the TNT show. I'll watch all those, and I'll catch up on games that I didn't stay up to watch.
Yeah, I watched the recap of the Warriors-Clippers game this morning because I can't lie and say that I stayed up for that game.
It's a little difficult.
Yeah, game three on a West Coast game one round one series, not great. But Kevin Durant hit his first five shots.
It's pretty good.
And I thought it was kind of cute that like Patrick Beverley, it was 2-0, and he's already chirping and chipping at him and getting into it early.
Tough Chicago kid.
But it's a nice little reminder. Like if the Bulls end up signing Patrick Beverley, right?
Because we'll get into some talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about the Bulls. We got the 5 at 5 next. He's Danny Parkins, and kind enough to join us. We're gonna have a lot of fun this morning. David is out. It's 5 at 5 next. The whole crew is here. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This segment brought to you by Noom. Have you tried almost everything to lose weight? Noom is a totally different, personalized weight loss program that uses psychology and small goals to change your habits so that you can lose weight and keep it off for good. Learn more at Noom, Noom.com.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Which was the worst loss for the White Sox, the bat flip game versus Kansas City or yesterday's disaster in Detroit?
I would honestly say that our friend Danny Parkins got it right in the first segment, which is that we don't really look at wins and losses with this White Sox team. I am content if Tim Anderson's playing well, if Moncada's playing well, if Aloy hits a home run. These are things that make me happy. So I'm going to say
Mount Eloy erupts again.
Yeah, Mount Eloy.
I didn't
understand when Mount Eloy erupted the first time, and apparently now that's a thing. So that was not as encouraging for me as maybe for others. Didn't care for it. Is there a Mount Eloy somewhere that I don't know about? Where is that, Kevin?
I don't understand the reference.
Okay.
I don't find it to be amusing.
I'm Googling.
Okay. Yeah.
Mount Eloy.
I should have Googled
myself. Is it a thing just because Kevbo keeps playing it?
It's a Jason Benetti thing because he kept saying it.
The first time he called it, I said, like, well, that's kind of weird. I didn't quite understand Mount Eloy erupting. And then, you know, I don't know. If his name were, I don't know, give me a mention an eruption here that I don't know about. Old Faithful.
There's a Mount Zion Church of Eloy, Arizona. That's all I've got.
Well, work that into the broadcast.
I'd be surprised if that was the reference.
Jason digging deep during spring training, apparently.
But I thought the bat flip game was a worse loss because Moncada got knocked out of it because, Giolito got hurt. And not that he's a huge part of the future of the organization, but he's a young guy that you'd like to see make a move. And, of course, Tim Anderson getting thrown out of the game. So that one bothered me more, but yesterday was just it's inexcusable to lose that game because you had come back and won it, and because they were kicking the ball all over the place. They had, what, 4 or 5 errors, and that's a team that had lost 5 in a row. Come on, finish it.
Yeah, so I'll answer the question that way. If it was a traditional season with a contending team that had expectations, I think yesterday's loss was worse because you came back and all the circumstances around it, and just like we saw with the Cubs early in the season, like the most painful way to lose a baseball game is when your bullpen blows it. And Carson Fulmer and all the expectations and stock that and investment that you have in him, for him to just be hitting batters and to lose that game, you get caught up in it. That's a painful loss. And I thought coming out of the Tim Anderson bat flip game, there was actually kind of a positive rallying cry around Tim Anderson. And teams like to talk about that stuff like it sparks them and all of that. So I thought a contextual loss, yesterday's was the worst. But like I said earlier, I don't know that any one loss is going to matter or really be remembered at the end of the season, because this season is about individual player development. So I guess yesterday's, but I don't think you'll care about either loss a week from now.
Yeah, I was a little torn on this one. I initially wanted to say the Royals game because of the ejection and how all that went down. You take out the hottest hitter in baseball, and then you had bad Nate Jones at the end of that game. But having caught some of the end of this game yesterday afternoon, they kept coming back. And it's like, right. All right, you know, it's good to see Eloy hit the home run, Cordell hit the home run, but then you had, you know, bad Nova, and then you had bad Fulmer. And Mully, you called it, and I looked it up. They made five errors yesterday, including Gordon Beckham. You forget which team he was on.
He's playing shortstop.
I had totally forgotten that Gordon Beckham was on that roster. And then I'm like, hey, Gordon Beckham yesterday. But that was my thought, was that the Royals won because of the ejection and everything that happened. But yesterday's was one of those where it's like, all right, they got this, and then they didn't have it.
Definitely both frustrating for different reasons. During the bat flip game, Mully, you mentioned the injuries. A lot of chances later in that game with runners left on and poor at bats and inability to drive in guys with fewer than two outs. So there was that, although I'm not going to say that game because I was at that game and I ate a lot of dollar hot dogs and I had a lot of cervezas and it was very sunny and there were no lines for anything, Dustin, because there were 400 people there. So I had an excellent time at the game.
Did you hit Antique Taco?
No, I didn't. Because I just had to keep just feeding myself these dollar hot dogs just because I felt inclined to do so.
Over under $3.50 hot dogs consumed.
It was under, barely, was three for the for the duration of the game.
That's a lot.
Good line by me.
It was. You see, well, of course.
That was a good line.
What you're bringing to the table here. Yesterday's loss was very, very, I don't want to say surprising, but a little bit surprising. Ivan Nova, I thought in this rotation, was the guy you could rely on the most. After Carlos Rodon, I thought maybe Nova would be a guy that goes out, gives you a professional outing. He's a veteran. He's usually fine. And he went out there and got roughed up by a putrid Detroit Tigers offense. I mean, Grayson Griner is going to go 3-for-4 against you. Maybe if he was Brittany Griner, I wouldn't have been that surprised. But Grayson Griner, Gordon Beckham's ghost getting a couple of hits, and it even spoiled the home run from my guy, Ryan Cordell, who I was praising yesterday.
Yes, you were.
He's my guy, and it was all for naught.
You foreshadowed.
I did, yeah. It portended good things for Ryan Cordell, Dustin.
Awkward. You brought up Antique Taco now 2 days in a row, so I got to get this in. I went to a Bulls game during spring break with the kids, had a great time. We had Antique Taco, and I was just, I was so excited. Like, we didn't go out to dinner around the United Center, even in the city, because like they've really stepped up their game big time at the United. Like the food at the United Center is really advertised well, and there's all these places. Like if you can't get to all these different restaurants, you get like a taste. I was so disappointed.
Really?
My wife took one bite and was like, I can't eat this.
I think they have Big Star at the United Center, not Antique Taco.
You're right. It was Big Star. Okay.
I'm a big fan of Big Star. I like them all.
Yeah. Big Star was no bueno.
I think Big Star has as good a fish taco as I've had in the city.
I had the carne asada, figured steak taco.
It's hard to believe.
The Big Star in the summer.
In Chicago,
the patio is phenomenal.
The taco is replacing sushi as the best beer food in Chicago right now. I thought it was pizza, then it became sushi, and now it's tacos.
I did have a bite of a honey butter chicken tender, and that was spectacular.
Honey butter, yeah.
Honey butter chicken tender?
Yeah, never had
that. That was spectacular. So that honey butter fried chicken lived up to the hype.
Foodie draft. Do you want to feel a little bit more at home?
I was going to question the sushi take, but the food takes are flying around. This is great.
You don't agree with sushi and beer? Unbelievable connection.
See, I'm more of a wine and sushi guy.
Oh, no.
Go beer and sushi?
Beer. Get yourself a little wasabi going.
Yeah.
Get yourself some good sushi. Don't get that stuff that's going to kill you. And then you get a little bite to it, and you get a nice little beer to it, and it'll solve your issues.
Honestly, there were so many things about moving back to Chicago that I loved, but living downtown and having the ability to have sushi delivered
it's unbelievable.
From 50 different restaurants is maybe the best thing about this city.
It's an amazing thing. And it's you tell people, well, we ordered out some sushi, and people think, oh, my God, how was the emergency room? No. This is done well.
It's the best.
All right, so to answer the question, the wins and losses not matter to the guys over at 35th and Shields. I get the players don't want to lose all the games, but it's about the future. And the problem was yesterday, you have to figure out what you have in Carson Fulmer. And Kevin and I were talking about this off the air. You guys were on the air. We were off the air.
Good show back there.
You had to put him in a situation, in a tense situation, and to see if he could deliver. And clearly, he couldn't step up and deliver in that situation.
The high leverage.
And was so nervous. I mean, wouldn't you have loved to have had a live mic on Don Cooper in that situation? Right? Wouldn't you have just loved to have been inside?
I think he's seen that before.
We could play some of his drops. Yesterday's was worse.
It's not like Carson Fulmer, you know, has some track record of success, and they were going to bring him in yesterday and finally see what
you
got. He was
a first-round pick. That's what he has.
He stunk before, and he stinks now, and he always will.
All right. Help Pete.
You know, as smart as you guys are, that might be the best question you've ever asked. I'm serious. I had never really contemplated this question.
Will the Cubs be 500 or above when you all get back to work on Monday?
I was listening to that interview you guys did with Len Casper live when he gave that answer. I was jealous that I hadn't asked him that question. I wanted that compliment so badly from Len Casper. It would have been validating. I will cautiously say yes, that they will win the series against the Diamondbacks. They only need to take 2 of 3 to be back to 500 when we get to work on Monday. And in a weird way, after listening to Jed Hoyer with you guys yesterday, of the starters, I'm most worried or unsure about the first starter, today's starter, Kyle Hendricks, because Jed was like, he's just a little off in his mechanics, but we figure over the next few starts, he'll get it locked back in, which suggests that if you're taking him literally, that he's so off in his mechanics that he won't snap back in just one start. And Hendricks was the guy I trusted most before the season, and still do. I still think he'll have a very good year. Darvish has been getting incrementally better, and Greinke hasn't had a great start to his season. That's the Saturday matchup. He's got an ERA near 6, and Quintana is finally pitching like the guy that they traded for. They've got the second-best run differential in the NL, the Cubs do, even after the awful start. I think they're the better team. I think they'll win the series, and they'll be 500 on Monday.
Yeah, I think they're going to win the series, too. What I find interesting about the question, it's really saying, did they just beat a Triple-A team, or are they back? And clearly, You want Chris Bryant to hit better. You want Tony Rizzo to get it going again, and you know he will. And Schwarber, I'm not sure if he's going to turn it around or where he's at or who he is. The most disturbing aspect, you're absolutely right, is Kyle Hendricks, who was the guy that you thought they went to him and they extended him. And, okay, so you got him, and he's going to be the centerpiece for a while. And the problem with Kyle is that because he can't throw a fastball, because his velocity is so low, when he's not pitching well, he looks like he can't pitch. And you're like, oh my God, they gave this guy an extension. It's just because we all are so used to velocity and we forget how he goes about it. So he's got to get whatever the mechanical issue together. I'd really like to see just a quality start. I'm not looking for the guy to throw a no-hitter, just a quality start. Just last for a while in the game and try not to give up too many runs. And I think they'll win 2 of 3.
Yeah, I'd like to see no home runs in the first inning for the Diamondbacks today, if that's possible. Can we draw that up for Kyle? Because
they traded Goldschmidt, so.
Well, that's true. Danny, I'm with you, though, because I'm thinking before the season, I'm like, all right, this is going to be Kyle Hendricks' year. He's really going to emerge, you know, as John Lester fades the last few years of his contract, and as he ages, of course, and I didn't know what to expect still from Yu Darvish, although I did enjoy watching his last start, not so much some of the others, but I thought Kyle would emerge as the leader in this rotation and as the best pitcher in this rotation, and so far it has not been the case, and hopefully today at Wrigley, although we'll see which way that wind is blowing. I don't know, the weather is calling for windy. So if it's blowing south to north, I don't necessarily like the ball sting in the park idea as happening. But I do think the Cubs are hitting the ball, despite the fact that Bryant and Rizzo aren't necessarily hitting the ball. I think they will take 2 of 3 this weekend. Darvish Greinke tomorrow will be fun to watch. So that, to me, would be the highlight of the series. It's supposed to be nice all weekend, too, so it'll be a beautiful weekend out there at the old ball yard.
Well, you know, they do play better at home, the Cubs, and off the top of my head, I would think that they should take 2 out of 3 from this team, but the way that Hendricks has been pitching to start the season doesn't really instill me in a lot of confidence in him today. I still, despite everyone wanting to do backflips and bend over and praise Yu Darvish for being able to get through 5 2/3 of a ball game, I so am not on board with that either. And then on Sunday, who do we have on Sunday? Jose Quintana. He's been in pretty good form. I think that might be the one that they win. So, no, I don't think that they will be 500. I think they're going to drop 2 out of 3 this weekend.
Oh, I absolutely think they'll be 500 by the time we get back, and I'm so happy to promote that Kevin will not be with us all next week. It'll be a vacation for everybody, including Kevin and myself.
It's going to be good for everybody.
Where are you going, buddy?
The Caribbean, yeah.
He's going to both Turks and Caicos.
And or Caicos, yeah.
He's not sure which one.
And he'll listen to country and Western while he's there.
I can guarantee that I won't, actually.
I think it helps, obviously, that Goldschmidt's not with that team anymore. That's a big deal. He is a absolute Cubs killer, and I'm already worrying and fretting over those games against the Cardinals because he has been a Cubs killer all the time. The Cubs always have trouble with the D-backs, especially in Arizona. But I do think they'll take 2 or 3, and by the time we get back to work, they will be a 500 or better team.
I don't quite get the question.
Is Addison Russell an automatic starter when he returns from suspension? Where would you play him, and who loses playing time when he's back?
It's interesting. He's what, a week away from hitting the minor leagues for his little stint, and he's working out in Arizona, right? So this is the problem, is the three guys that are playing second base are combining for over 300, and whatever that guy's name
Descalso.
Is. Thank
Descalso.
You. He is really a clutch hitter, and he has really played, you know, playing the role of Ben Zobrist isn't necessarily Ben Zobrist. It's him, and I don't know. I'm a little bit – Addison Russell, over the course of this thing, has kind of lost standing in my eyes, right? So I, by that, I just mean, is Javi a better shortstop? I don't know that Addison Russell can play second. I think Javi's probably a better second baseman, but – are we automatically moving Javi out of shortstop? I love that guy. He's been my favorite Cub since he came up. I just think, you know, he created tag metrics. I've never heard of that before. The guy is unbelievable tagging people out. I love everything about him. I guess Addison Russell comes back and starts, and Baez moves to second, and you go from there. I guess that's the way they're going to do it, but I would wonder if that is an automatic thing in their minds.
I don't think it is, but it depends how we're defining, like, automatic starter. Game one, yeah, he probably starts at shortstop, and that's what they said the plan was before the year. That's what Joe said,
right,
that he'll get back and he'll be at short. But they've proven, right, that Kyle Schwarber didn't start opening day. Ian Happ started in the minors. Just because you were a part of that young core, you're not going to start 6 of 7 days automatically, and Addison Russell certainly hasn't earned that. The only guys who have are Bryant, Rizzo, Baez, and Contreras. Everyone else moves around and starts based on the matchup, so I'd expect him to play more at short than anywhere else when he does play, but like you said, they've got to get Descalso in the lineup for matchup. Zobrist has to stay fresh. So I expect him to not be a six-day-a-week starter. I'd maybe say he starts half the games depending on matchups. And honestly, depending on how he hits.
He's got to hit.
He was a bad hitter last year.
Yep.
If he hits, he'll play. If he doesn't, he'll be in that rotation.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think coming back, at least initially, that he is not an automatic start. And I would like to see Baez gets more time at shortstop as well. I know what they've said, but to me, Baez is one of the keys to this team. I don't mess with him at all if I don't have to. And if I'm Joe, you make Russell earn his way back in. You don't just starting him 5 or 6 days a week. You have the flexibility. I think we see kooky Joe lineups coming now that he'll have another flexible guy to put in there, and then you can move Zobrist more into the outfield. You could play Bodhi wherever. Descalso is a multiple position guy. But Russell is a guy that, as a rookie in 2016, I'm like, all right, this guy is a future star, and he's done nothing but really trend downward since then, and certainly the off-the-field stuff is terrible as well. So he's going to have to earn it his way back in.
Yeah, Molly, you mentioned that he's lost some standing on this team as a player. I think he's lost a lot of standing as a human being, and I don't really think that that's going to bode well for him. You know, Jed Hoyer said yesterday with you guys, and this has kind of been the company line, that his return is conditional, and it's a privilege to play for the organization, and blah, 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 and all of those things. But the fact of the matter is, if he can play a good shortstop for you, he's going to be in there. and they do value his defense. And when he has been healthy and been eligible to play, he's pretty much been an automatic starter. And I think they really like the idea of having him and Javi Baez up the middle. Now, that does create a little bit of a problem trying to get a lot of these infielders in the lineup. You have to play Chris Bryant almost every day. You have to play Descalso the way he's been hitting. Zobrist is still doing it. David Bodie's off to a good start. So I'm not sure if you're going to see a couple of these guys maybe play more in the outfield going forward. But I think Russell, when he does come back, at least at first, will probably slot in there and be playing the majority of the games at short.
Yeah, I think if he's on this team, if you've gone through all of this that the Cubs had to go through, the off the field issues, right? The PR, I don't want to say nightmare, but a PR issue for them, then he's got to be in there. And the problem is, Danny, you brought it up. Mostly we don't know if he can play second base. Like, why hasn't he been over there more often? Now, maybe when nobody's been paying attention, right, when the season started, they've got him over there. But I'd like to keep Baez where he's at. And I have him play second base. But we don't know if he can play second base.
I don't think
it's as easy to play second base as maybe everybody thinks.
I don't think it is, and I think it speaks to how talented that Baez is, that he can go from second to short. I assume that they're right in their evaluation that Addison Russell is a better shortstop than Javi Baez.
Right.
And so,
Baez can't be out of the lineup, right?
Baez has to play every game play.
But then all of a sudden, is Baez playing third base?
He could. And, I mean, it speaks to his versatility.
So Baez at third, Bryant in left, Russell at short,
Descalso or Bodie, or Zobrist
in second.
Well, that's the embarrassment of riches, right? Ian Happ still isn't even here.
And Ian Happ's not here.
And so I think Bryant is going to play more outfield. I think that's what you'll see.
Then the question becomes, is that okay with the Bryants?
Right. Well, that's another element to it, but I have to assume that it is, and they want the defense to be strong up the middle. Every team does. So if they're going for their defensive lineup, it'll be Russell at short, Baez at second. And remember, they can move around in-game. If Russell doesn't start and they've got a lead, he'll be your late-inning defensive shortstop, and Bryant can shift to the outfield if they got to keep another guy in and move Descalso or Bodie or whomever to third base.
I just think if he's on this team, then four games a week at least, he's in there.
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
One of the highlight regular season games of 2018 was the Rams' 54-51 victory over the Chiefs. The Bears play both teams this year. Which opponent is the better matchup and why?
Man, it's going to be hard for me to remove my bias from this one. I am personally more excited for Bears Chiefs. I'll have family in town. I will have friends in town. I love the Matt Nagy, Andy Reid storyline. It's like Obi-Wan Kenobi and Luke Skywalker, right? And so the mentor and the protege. So I love that story. But I was
isn't there weren't they related? Was Obi-Wan related on the mother side to Luke Skywalker?
I don't remember all those details. Yeah. I don't
so
think
long
so.
Don't look at me. I mean, we can ask Connor when he gets in here.
I don't think they were related.
I'll text Connor. He might be up. He's a dork.
He's probably watching now.
We'd appreciate that. But it's just, I was bummed when that game was week 16 because there's a good chance that one of the team was disappointed or one of the team has a playoff seed locked up and it doesn't matter quite as much. And Bears-Rams, given that they're both in the NFC, that could be for first round bye. So I think the right answer, if there is such a thing, is Bears-Rams because of the importance of the NFC. But I'm personally much more looking forward to Bears-Chiefs.
I think that the matchup I'm excited about is the Chiefs because of Mahomes. I don't know what kind of year he's going to have. I know that he was an MVP. I know that they're trying to prep for what will be. He will be the targeted player in the league. The league has now gone to work on that guy after last year. They're going to try to figure out how to stop him. And Belichick did it in the first half of that game by doubling Hill, I believe, right? And they were sending pressure from different places just trying to contain him. And now, who's their weapon? Who's left as far as the big weapon for Kansas City? They've got to do some work on that because of the impending suspension and all the rest of it. So I think that that's going to be an interesting – that would be a great matchup, as you say, if it were earlier in the season. But that's the one. I want to see if you can go to, if Chuck Pagano can sort of talk to the Bear, talk to Nagy, and figure out a way to stop that offense. I think the Bears have a lot of personnel that could match up with that team. And then conversely, I think that that Nagy has a better, should have a better offense, maybe better weapons. Got to see what happens in the draft, too. They still have a couple of things to answer. Then the Chiefs' defense, which was awful last year, will be rebuilt and will be better. But, you know, I didn't love that 54-51 game. It was a video game, and I like a little defense in my football, my NFL. So I was very curious the way the Bears played the Rams. I thought they won on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And the big thing they did is they kept the disruptors, Aaron Donald and company, out of Mitchell's face for much of that game. And that was a huge part, winning the line of scrimmage both sides of their victory. So maybe they match up better with that team. But I'm looking forward to, if it matters, I think that Chiefs game is interesting for a lot of different reasons. And Mahomes is a big one.
Yeah, to me, the answer is the Rams because of conference playoff jockeying. And plus, you saw Bears-Rams this past season. Part of the reason, well, many reasons we were all upset when the Bears lost that playoff game, but one of the main reasons is we already saw them beat the Rams, and you figured things would go through Los Angeles, and they did, and I thought the Bears had a good chance to do that. But for this coming season, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs thing will be exciting, and Mahomes and Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, and all that, but I think the Rams game will be more important in terms of playoff seeding. Be interesting to see, though, and you guys said it, who's on this team at the time and who's healthy, who's not healthy, the Tyreek Hill legal thing. I mean, how long is his suspension wind up or, you know, what happens there?
Can he still play shortstop for the Cubs?
Tyreek Hill?
Sorry, I'm mixing up my spousal abusers.
Well, there you go.
Oh,
no.
God.
Can Addison Jeez Russell play wide receiver Louise for the Chiefs? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
No, I will get back on point here and say the Rams, and I loved how they shut down Jared Goff last year, and I'm sure Jared would like to have another try at the old Bears D. Well, he's going to have one.
So I agree with you, Michael, that the conferential game, what am I saying here? The game within the NFC will mean more. In terms of playoff seeding and a sure somewhat familiar opponent, that's all definitely true, but it's all about the quarterbacks, and Pat Mahomes is the reigning MVP. You have to think he's going to continue to get better. I mean, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be able to. He's pretty much the complete quarterback. He can do a little bit of everything. In fact, he does things that I didn't even know that anybody could do. He's inventing new things at all times, and there will always be the storyline around Mitch Trubisky that the MVP of the league was taken, what, 8 picks after him or whenever. What was Mahomes? So 10th overall or
11th? Yeah, Mahomes went 10th.
And Ryan Pace whiffed on the pick. He took the wrong guy. And that entire week leading up to the game, it will be reinforced. And every touchdown that Mahomes throws and every wide-open receiver that Trubisky misses will continue to be instilled in our minds. And I think for that, the Chiefs game will be more interesting from a storyline standpoint, even though maybe not from a conference standpoint.
Well, a couple things here. It's April 19th, and I love the fact that we're grinding on the Bears' schedule right now. I love football as much as everybody else on this panel. The only problem is that after this long winter that we've had, like, I'm looking forward to May 19th, June 19th, July 19th, and August 19th. The first one of these games we're talking about is on the 17th of November. And I hope, we all hope, that the game still matters, that the Bears are still in it. The other thing that's interesting, because it's an NFC game, the Rams were here last year. A lot of the talk was the reason the Bears were able to win is because Jared Goff looked like he wanted nothing to do with a nighttime game at Soldier. So, okay.
Weather.
So now let's go west and let's see what happens. Can the defense still do the job against that team without Vic Fangio, right? That's another factor that's hanging over. How good will the defense be without Vic? Mahomes is awesome. He's so special. I got away with murder in my fantasy draft a couple years ago. I drafted him in like the 18th round, so it becomes like a super keeper where I can keep him for 3 years. I know nobody cares about my fantasy team, but
you certainly don't.
Is I get Please, Mahomes Dustin, on my team tell for us 3 years. It's That's awesome. Great. I'm coming up on year two of that.
Will the
really
Bears
like
we be remembered
that.
More for drafting Mitchell Trubisky or not drafting Patrick Mahomes?
Great question. Great question.
I think if you're being optimistic, you want this draft that to be remembered like the Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger draft.
Yep.
Where Roethlisberger was the third one taken, and I would argue the best of the three, and then I would argue Rivers the second best, and he was taken second. But no Giants fan would say that they were upset that they took Eli Manning.
Well, they are now. But not, yeah, but not they, when they were winning Super Bowls.
They got a couple rings on their finger.
15 years
but
in advance,
they didn't take Eli Manning, right?
What?
They didn't take Eli Manning, right?
Chargers drafted him and then traded him.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, they didn't technically.
That they made a move.
They ended up with him.
To have him be their quarterback
on draft
day.
It's a good point. Like, you want this to be a quarterback-rich class that takes teams to playoffs, and this is like the new big three, the new Mount Rushmore quarterbacks in the NFL.
All three of those guys are going to the Hall of Fame, though. You think Mitch has a shot in hell at being a Hall of Fame quarterback?
We'll find out this year. Third year.
Let's get Michael Lombardi back on.
I would love to.
I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
Do the NBA playoffs do anything for you with the Bulls out? How long do you think it'll be before they're back?
Love the NBA playoffs. I'm going to catch up over the weekend with a lot of that stuff. I'll be watching the NBA playoffs. Golden State seems a team that is destined to win another championship unless they are injured or ennui sets in, some sort of boredom. Yeah, French boredom. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to lose unless they just kind of no longer care, which I think they will, and I think they're going to be really fun to watch, and I think the finals are going to be fun and all the rest of it. The Bulls, man, I got to tell you, this is so confounding to me. Do we even know anything? Here's what we know about the Bulls core. Chris Dunn doesn't belong in it. That's the only thing we've learned. We haven't seen these guys play together. We haven't seen enough of these players. I went to a game where Zach LaVine had a career high 47 points, and I believe there was also 40 points from Markkanen. It was sensational, and it was fantastic, and it's too rare that we've seen all these guys on the floor at the same time. So I can't tell you if the Bulls are moving forward. I got to see who they get out of the draft, and hopefully they have a higher pick. I'd love to see them wind up with one of the first two picks in the draft. Either guy would be great for me. I look at the number of players that I don't know about on that roster, and I don't know that they can play together. I don't know how good they are. I always liked Otto Porter Jr. I thought that was a good move, and I know a lot of people hated that, but I think he can play. Markkanen seems like he can play. LaVine seems like he can play. Wendell Carter, do we know if he can play? I don't know. I haven't seen it. I want to see him play. And it's been a couple years now.
They've had horrible luck with injuries, and that's really stunted the development of seeing if these guys can play together. I love the NBA.
Yeah.
I love the NBA playoffs.
It's great.
It gets better as it goes. A lot of these first-round matchups are fairly lopsided, even though there's been some intrigue early. And I agree that the Warriors are the favorites, but they're not nearly as much of an overwhelming favorite as they've been. They've already suffered a huge injury with DeMarcus Cousins, and they don't have as much depth as they've had in years past, especially up front. I can't wait for Rockets-Warriors. I think that'll be amazing. I mean, people forget, the Rockets should have won last year. They had Game 7 on their home floor, and if it wasn't for the worst three-point shooting performance in NBA history and a Chris Paul injury, the Rockets would have beaten them last year. And they have this impending Kevin Durant. Everyone assumes it's a done deal that he's leaving. So if they get punched in the mouth, if they get down 2-1 or 3-2 and they got to win a game 6 on a road court, do they just implode?
Is there a certain Sparty that takes a swing at Kevin Durant?
No, the Warriors would never blow a 3-1 lead. They just couldn't do it.
Right.
Would never happen.
Exactly. So I don't and I think that adds intrigue to this year, that it's not as much of a guarantee that the Warriors are going to win. And Giannis looks to be on a mission, which
he's, MVP.
He's incredible to watch. I hope so. Have him at 5-1. As for the Bulls getting back, May 14th is the only day this entire year that matters for the Bulls because of how it played out with injuries like you were talking about. If they win the lottery, and John Paxson, he co-opted my phrase, luck is not a plan, and they get lucky, they can be in the playoffs next year if they get Zion or Ja Morant. And I think RJ Barrett's going to be a star, but he's a little redundant on the Bulls with the pieces they already have.
I think Morant would be unbelievable with that group.
He'd be great. That's exactly what they need.
But I mean, you know, if you win the lottery, then you obviously have to take the generational talent.
Agreed, completely. But May 14th is the day that matters, because if they get unlucky and they get the sixth or the seventh pick and then they sign Patrick Beverley, I think the ceiling on this rebuild is remarkably low, because they'll be too good this upcoming year to have a hope at a high pick next year, but you don't have the potential to have any superstars on your team, and your ceiling will be the sixth seed in a couple of years.
Yeah, Danny, I'm with you, because I think this is their last chance at a really high pick because of all the injuries they had this past year. I don't think they would have been this bad without the injuries. Right. So, you know, we'll see, you know, where the old ping pong balls or the cards or however they, you know, do the lottery. It's here in Chicago, so hopefully that bodes well for the Bulls. As for the playoffs, yeah, I mean, of course, I enjoy watching them. I certainly pick up more as it goes along, and it'll be interesting to see. Rockets and Warriors will be a thing, and I'd be curious to see who comes out of the East as well. But certainly interesting, and I know with the general public, similarly, when the Bulls aren't in it, it picks up more as the series mean more.
I still like the NBA quite a bit. I enjoy the playoffs. Thus far, though, the first-round matchups haven't done a ton for me, so as they continue to progress, I'll get more and more into it. As far as the Bulls, if they don't end up with one of these top two, and I might even extend it to a top three pick, because I think RJ Barrett's going to be a pretty damn good player as well, but if they don't manage to get one of these top picks in this draft, Danny, you're absolutely right. They're going to end up back where they were, you know, however many years ago with Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon and Luol Deng, where they're perennially like the third or fourth or fifth seed in the East, and they're maybe winning a series here, and they're not really a contender, and they're just kind of treading water, and they're back in NBA hell, as everybody likes to put it. So it's so important. If they don't get one of these picks, boy, they are absolutely screwed. Although Paxton will keep his job for another 15 years regardless.
Can they have Andres Nocioni back as well?
I would be in favor of that.
I loved that Bulls Wizard series with the Nocioni chance at the UC. That was a lot of fun. Meant nothing, but I loved it.
I mean, this is why trying for Zion should have been more of a real thing. It's nice that they won some games and gained some confidence, and we saw a little here and theres, but come on. They should have at least been in line for that second ping pong ball. I know it's only a couple percentage chances, but it's so important. Now, why we should care as Bulls fans about these playoffs, without injuries, the Bulls should at least be the eighth seed in the East next year, right? They should at least be that. So you want to see, how do they stack up? How far away are they from playing like in May or June? They're Zion Williams. That's how far away they are. They're that far away. Now, as far as the West goes, like this round, kind of boring, but, you know, Golden State, Houston, right? That could be the next round, assuming everything goes the way the NBA is going to want it to go. That could be exciting. But if Golden State's not in the finals, if it's like somehow it's Denver against Milwaukee, you know, no shot.
I'd be into that.
I'm watching the Cubs game. I mean, you'd literally have to turn it on my TV, take the remote controls, put them upstairs for me to stick to an NBA game instead of watching a Cubs game right now.
All right.
Just being honest.
312-644-6767 is the number, and this is the Mully and Haw Show. We've got Danny Parkins this morning, and we will take your phone calls next. It's Mully and Haw. It's The Score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.